Hello and welcome to On the Line. I'm Carl Richter. Dr. Laura Sykes of Texas A&M University Texarkana is back with another entry in our local history series. This one's all about the history of the railroad and its significance in the founding of Texarkana and in the development of Texarkana in the early days. If you like this sort of thing and you haven't checked them out yet, I'm going to put links to our previous local history stories in the show notes. We've done episodes on the Caddo Nation and on the Great Red River Raft so far, and we're going to keep going. We want to hear from you about what sort of topics you might want to listen to. So please send us an email. We've got our email addresses in the show notes too, and we'd love to hear from you. Here's my conversation with Laura Sykes. Dr. Laura Sykes is back for our local history series. Today, we are talking about the railroad.
That's right. The railroad is going to not only change America, but it's also going to give birth to Texarkana, a railroad town.
Right. And, of course, we see that all over town now, people paying homage to the trains. You know, we have everything's named after trains and so forth downtown.
I was reading for this podcast some articles, and I read one by Beverly Rowe, and she's talked about how one railroad historian has talked about how there are two types of towns that got railroads. The first type is the kind that already existed, so they had to have a lot of discussions and back and forth about right-of-ways and where trains are going to go and all of that stuff. But the second kind is the kind that is created by the railroad. Mm-hmm. So you don't really have that kind of back and forth or anything. Everything is laid out at the outset to work with the railroad.
Right. The only sort of kink here is the state line.
Right.
Because the streets are gridded off the railroad, but then the State Line Avenue goes straight north and south, sort of cuts diagonally through the grid.
And obviously that's going to be a big issue here, and people are going to be wrangling back and forth and back and forth for decades over where the railroads are going to go, where the depot is going to be, and all of that stuff. In fact, it created this tension that, according to one thing I read, was only solved in the 1940s over a particularly productive fish dinner that the cities had together. So it's an ongoing problem. But
never underestimate the power of fish.
We love fish, don't we?
Yeah.
I assume it was catfish. It had to be.
Had to be. So
railroads are really interesting in a bigger sense than just Texarkana. So I thought we could talk about what the railroads change in American life, but also around the world. So the railroads are a product of the Industrial Revolution, which is when we invent, you know, steam engines. And so we can make engines for everything. And so we begin to make factories. We begin to make modes of transportation like the steamboat. And we also get the steam engine, the railroad. And, of course, it starts in England in the late 1700s. And it takes a little while for us to sort of catch up with that here in the United States. We're not really going to get our first railroads here in a big way until like the 1830s. And in the South, we're not really going to get them until after the Civil War. So it's going to take actually quite a long time.
I didn't realize that.
Oh, yeah. And we'll talk more about like why that is. You know, part of it is on us. Part of it is not. It's interesting. But the idea is that this is going to shorten distances. It's going to make it possible primarily to move stuff. Of course, it's going to move people as well. But the real reason the railroads are so important is because you can move the crop that you've grown or whatever it is that you're producing to a place where it can be sold and moved on to consumers. So we began sort of our interest in the railroads in the 1830s, really trying in earnest to get them started. And the interesting thing is we start in the South in the 1830s as well, and including around here in Texarkana. The very first sort of initiatives to try and get the railroad here started in the 1830s, 1836, and we're not going to end up getting them until 1873. So if you think about that, that's almost 40 years of working it out.
Yeah, that's a long time.
That's a long time, but we have to think about it in terms of not only the difficulty involved. You have to have the land. You have to figure out where the land is going to come from. How much land? Who pays for it? Who's going to build all of this stuff? Where are the materials going to come from? But you also have to remember that the North and the South are already in this sort of tension that's coming from the Civil War, or coming to ahead with the Civil War. So there's a lot of contention about where federal money is going to be spent. The South traditionally has not liked federal intervention in general. And it's also been really interested in states' rights, you know, keeping things divided state by state. And if you think about it, the railroad kind of counters that. Because not only do you need a massive investment from the government to build one of these things, but they also cross borders. So you're having to have interstate cooperation.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And so in the South, it's going to prove a little bit more of a hurdle than it does in places in the North. In the North, they have already started these massive public works projects like the Erie Canal. That take, you know, that spans multiple states and take tons of government money. In the South, there's more reluctance to sort of buy into what we call the American system, this Henry Clay idea that we should develop our infrastructure as a national unit rather than just state by state. So that interest is here. And in the 1830s, they're actually going to start like the surveys and petitioning the government and creating committees. Now, if you live in Texarkana, you know that people around here still love to create committees. We have committees for just about everything.
Yeah, everywhere.
Right? So that's not a new impulse. So these committees, they're going to start mostly when we're talking about sort of what's going to happen in Texarkana. A lot of this is going on in two different places, right? It's going to happen in Arkansas and in Texas. We have both sides sort of wrangling. Texas is going to be a little bit faster than Arkansas on the uptake as far as this stuff goes. And it makes sense in a way because Texas is going to be the gateway to the West, right? And so it's going to be essential for Texas's growth, which is going to be very rapid over this period of the 1800s, to have these railroads connected to the rest of the country. In Arkansas, it is slower, it's less developed, there's less funding available, and so it's going to take a lot of wrangling going on.
If we're talking about the 1830s, much of what is now Texas was Mexican territory, correct?
That's right, and over the course of sort of the period before the Civil War, they're going to gain their independence, and then they're going to eventually join the Union in 1848, I believe. And this is going, it might be 1846, but you guys have Google, so you can look it up. we're hearing 45? Okay, great. I'm Louisianan, so
yeah, I was about to say,
not my problem.
Tell me you're from Louisiana without
I know when Louisiana joined the Union. Okay, so the idea is that we're dealing not only with a lot of sort of technical and practical issues, but like you say, there's also a lot of politics going on at this time, especially in this corner of Texas, which is sort of a borderland, or Texas, Arkansas, which is sort of a borderland. And we're dealing with a bunch of different conflicting interests and idealized futures that people are sort of imagining for this place. So 1836 is when this all starts. But like I said, that's not going to be sort of it's not going to be very quick how it happens. Now, in the meantime, we do have railroads that are being built around here. And these are what we call narrow gauge railroads. Okay, so let's talk about gauge for a second.
Okay.
The gauge is how distant the tracks are from each other. Okay, so England's going to create the standardized track gauge, which have here, it's like, I think 4 feet, 6 inches. And this is going to be standardized over time in both the United States and around the world. And this is really important because if you think about it, the track size sort of, it's not like a road, right? Roads just kind of connect to each other and you drive over them. You have to have the carriage to like put the railroad cars on, and it has to be gauged to the certain size, right? So whenever you don't have a standardized gauge, that means you can't connect railroads up with each other and use the same train cars and move it back and forth, which we know like the Soviets made great use of during the World Wars. You know, they changed their train gauges, and it meant that the Germans were sort of halted at the border.
Oh, I never knew that.
Mm-hmm. We love train gauge stuff. Anyway, so the standard train gauge is like 4 feet, 8.5 inches exactly. And at this point, that hasn't been really standardized yet. They're still, you know, wrangling to see what's going to be going on. Of course, England's going to end up winning because they started the whole thing.
Sort of like VHS and Betamax.
Right, exactly. The thing about the narrower gauge, though, is that it's about the narrow gauge, standard narrow gauge that we have here in this area is about 3 feet, 6 inches, which it costs about 33% less to build. Why? Because it's about 33% smaller, right?
Right, yeah.
So
shorter railroads.
Shorter guys. Railroads. And also, you have to understand that around here, you know, the way that the terrain goes and everything, there are a lot of twists, there are a lot of turns, there are a lot of small spaces you want to get in and out of, and sometimes that narrow gauge is actually beneficial. So we're going to create a bunch of these narrow gauge railroads. Some of them are going to be so small that they're like 2 feet, 6 inches. These are called dinky railroads,
right?
Which I really like. And you would put a dinky engine on them.
Nice.
And they would go short distances. One example would be like they would go from timber. Timber was like everything in this area. We're in the piney woods. One of the things we want to put on the railroads to ship off, right, is the timber. That's like one of the biggest things. We also have cotton that's being grown, but this is even before we get, you know, a whole lot of settlement here for that. So they would build one of these dinky railroads going to timber camps and just from the timber camp to the next point of transportation, right? Mm-hmm. And in fact, some of these were not even ballasted, so they would be able to pick them up and move them as soon as that timber camp is exhausted. So we had a lot of these going through the state, mostly shorter length, and they're all these different widths, right? So you can only really put your train car on them.
Yeah. Well, there's that train that I think still runs from Palestine up to Rusk. Is that right?
I don't know.
You know? Yeah, it's a narrow gauge railroad that's here in East Texas that you can still, I think you could probably still take a ride on.
Neat. I mean, these are so, they're like a really interesting little relic, and I think they're really cool. And this isn't something the South invents. In the North, they've had these for a really long time. You know, they would go from like a farm to a port or whatever, and you have just these small ones. And people would build them themselves, right? So you would get out there. Sometimes they would even in this area, which is a terrible idea. Well, in the Northwest, they do it too, but it's a terrible idea here. They would even make the rails out of wood. Which we have a lot of termites here, and so it became very quickly apparent that this wasn't a good idea. But, you know, it makes sense. They're trying to do these things for low cost. And what they would do is they would stick these little railroad cars on these carriages that go onto the railroad tracks. And you can, and the train cars would fit on the carriage. And then when it got to the different rail size, right, when you got to the main point or whatever, they would pick the car up off of the carriage and put it onto one of the standard size carriages. Okay.
Yeah.
This doesn't work in reverse, though, because if you put one of the standard size carriages on one of these dinky railroads, they would be hanging off the sides, right?
Yeah.
So this is going to be one reason that we're going to end up, you know, standardizing at the size that we do. So these dinky railroads are going all through here. And at the time, you know, we were talking about the steam engine. That's not what we were working with. There was not a single steam engine west of the Mississippi before the 1850s.
So instead of steam engines, what did they use?
Okay, so these are going to burn, well, they could burn coal, but more typically here, they would burn pine, wood. So they would be using the wood to create these massive fires, and then that would create the steam properties that would come from compressing the fire, which has to have been a crazy hot job, especially here. I mean, think about how hot it is here.
Right.
And the trains would actually have these metal grates over the top of their stacks to try and prevent embers and ashes from flying out of the top of the train car and catching everything around it on fire.
Right.
even if you were in the train car as a passenger, you would have these ashes and cinders coming in to the train car as you're trying to travel. And they're just lit by oil lamp. I mean, it just cannot have been a very pleasant experience. Right. Plus, these aren't smooth tracks. These are tracks that have been sort of laid out slipshod. So it's a very different experience than what we think of as, you know, sort of train travel today. And so these narrow gauge railways are going to be sort of predominant in this area for a really long time. And we're going to begin to standardize them sort of much later in the 1880s. We're going to begin to move away from them. So while it takes a long time for us to get a major railroad line, we do have these dinkies going around everywhere, right? So we're in the train age, but we're just in sort of a janky version of it where we have like pine trees being burned, like, you know, this different type of situation. So the committee that's trying to create the railroad is going to work on not only getting the funding from the federal government, but it's also working on getting land. Of course, a lot of this land is going to be land that, especially in some of the undeveloped areas, is going to be land that's owned by indigenous people. And it's going to be, you know, purchased through eminent domain and other means to create this railway. And the idea that we're working towards is to connect the railway that is coming up to Texarkana from Texas, right? We have a railway coming up from Texas. The railways change their names like every other day because they all had too many committees. Right. But we'll call this one the Texas Pacific Railway.
Right.
And it's coming up to the Arkansas border. And the idea is that we also want to connect to essentially Missouri and through there, Illinois, through the Fulton and Cairo Railroad. Okay, so the Texas Railroad is being built up towards the border, and this is through the development of the Texas Railway System, okay, which is going along famously. Mm-hmm. But Arkansas is feeling a lot of pressure because as we have westward movement of the population, especially after the gold rush, Arkansas and even this area on the border of Texas is feeling a lot of pressure from people who are coming through and moving west. Strain on our infrastructure. You know, we are working with steamboats almost exclusively at this point. You know, other than that, it's like a wagon or a horse or walk-in, right? Mm-hmm. And so this is putting a lot of strain on the system. And so they're going to sort of rush in the 1800s, the second half of the 1800s, to try and get some of this stuff in place. We want to connect to essentially Little Rock, which then connects to Missouri, which then, of course, connects to Illinois. And that connects to the rest of the world, right? It's bringing us onto the map. It's going to take a while for them to connect up with Texas, but the idea is that ultimately we'll have this grand trunk line, which is basically a main railway mm-hmm. that's going to go all the way from the west all the way up to the north through here, mm-hmm. okay? But some things really intervene in the meantime that are going to slow progression down and mean that we actually aren't going to get that railway until 1873, 1874, which is, of course, when Texarkana is founded. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that stops the development of the railway is the Civil War. So you have to think about it this way. The federal government is giving the money for the railway, and then you opt out of the federal government, right? What's going to happen to that money?
So, if only there were a lesson that maybe someone in the future might learn from that.
So what actually happens is it's in the 1850s that this committee finally gets the approval of the federal government to build this railway. And it coincides with a couple of events that are not very good for us. First of all, we have the Panic of 1857, which is a financial depression, small financial depression that happens. There's a run on the banks, and this is going to set our funding back. In 1859, we get approval from the Congress to start building, but then, of course, by this time, we're already talking about secession. And so everything sort of goes into pause. One of the guys who's on the committee, the Fulton and Cairo Committee, goes back to the north because he's from the North and it's time. Yeah. A couple of them joined the military, joined the army, the Confederate army. And so they're not around to help anymore. And it's really a question as to whether this is ever going to get made or not. We don't really know at this point. And in fact, during the war, both the North and the South try to get their money, their hands on that railroad money, the railroad money that's going to eventually build the railroad to here.
Right.
They had already collected bonds and sureties and things from people who are investing in the railroad. And against all odds, they're going to be able to keep their hands on it. Now, during the war, during the Civil War, the South's train system suffers enormously. Not only is it slipshod at best to begin with, but not only does development stop, but we're also going to be literally like pulling up tracks and stuff to melt down to make weapons or to, we're going to be pulling up railroad tracks and moving them other places so that the military can ship things. It's just going to be really bad for our infrastructure.
Yeah.
This war. So the train, Fulton and Cairo train plan is going to miraculously survive the war, and they're going to begin to pick up where they left off in the aftermath of the war around 1866, which is pretty fast after the war. It takes a while for us to sort of get things together. But I think because they were able to save the money for it and the idea persisted through the war, even though it seemed for a while like it might never happen, it is going to happen. It just is taking a long time. But, you know, infrastructure is like that. This is a big project. It's going to be life-changing for everyone around here.
Yeah, definitely.
So in 1866, they're going to start planning again and trying to get this railroad to come through here. Meanwhile, the Texas Railroad is creeping up closer and closer to the state line. So the question is now, where is this railroad going to go? It's going to go from Little Rock, which from there it goes further north, all the way here to that state line, anticipating joining with the Texas Railroad, which it's finally going to do in 1881, which is several years after we're going to be established here as a town.
Right.
In the meantime, there are people who are looking at what's going on and thinking, you know, there are going to be places that are going to spring up around here. There are going to be new locales that are going to need to have populations in them to support this railroad. And of course, we are going to be one of them. So people begin to talk about how to prepare for the railroad's arrival. We have over 1,000 laborers who are going to go from Jefferson, Texas, all the way up to Little Rock, and they're going to start building this thing.
Right? Oh, wow.
And so it's going to be sort of coming our way. And there's going to be a group of investors who decide that they should create a town charter here because it's going to be at the juncture of these railways, and we need to have a train station. We need to have services for these people. And really, that's what Texarkana is born for as is a service place for these trains, a place for the people who are going to be coming in and out of on these trains to stay overnight at a hotel, to get food, to get their clothes washed, things like that. Mm-hmm. And of course, around that, what's going to develop is a lot of other services, and then of course a community and later a town.
Yeah. And with the vices that come with all of that.
Yeah. I mean, the brothels were here as soon as the railroad was here. In fact, they had these traveling tents, sort of tent brothels that would move along with the railroad builders ahead of the railroad as they're building it. So when I say it's been here since the beginning, it's been here since the beginning, right?
I'd watch that movie.
Right? Yeah. I would totally be into that. And Beverly Rowe actually has written some interesting stuff about this and the demimonde that surrounds it. So if you want to read more about that, she's a great local historian. So one of the questions is, you know, where's the railroad going to go and what's that going to do to the local sort of economy around here? I mentioned Jefferson because it's the city that's really the locus of sort of energy in this area at that time. And the reason for that, the reason for that is because of the steamboats. And essentially, as soon as the railroad it comes through, Jefferson's going to turn into like a ghost town, essentially. I mean, you know, more or less, they're going to lose a lot of that momentum, and it's going to sort of be replaced here in Texarkana. A lot of people are going to move from Jefferson to Texarkana. In fact, A.L. Gayo and some of the other founding fathers of Texarkana, I don't know if that's the right phrase, but founders of Texarkana actually were living in Jefferson at the time. And then they sort of all go in on this land deal, buying up these plots of land surrounding the Fulton and Cairo Railroad. Okay. And that is, of course, the foundation of Texarkana, which comes in 1873. Now, I want to say a little bit about 1873, because that's a big year. Not only is it the year of our founding, but a couple of really heavy things happen in 1873. First of all, we have the Panic of 1873, which is the greatest economic downturn before the Great Depression. And this is caused by the railroad bubble. So
those bubbles.
The bubbles, right? Yeah. We still see them today. We've recently saw NFT bubble. That was fun. That was a exciting adventure. Bubbles, AI bubble. I feel like we're in an AI bubble right now.
Yeah, I've been hearing a lot about that.
And so it's nothing new. It's a very old thing, but this is what's happening. People are investing tons and tons of money into the railroads, including the government. But most of this is getting done, like the government is paying for it, but they're paying private companies to do it. Okay. And then those companies, you know, have stock and everything. They're practicing vertical integration, which is a means by which they try to incorporate all of the modes of production involved in something. So if you're a railroad, if you're doing vertical integration, you would own the company that makes the railroad ties. You'd own the company that makes the train cars. You'd own the company that...
The coal mine.
Yeah, the coal mine. Yes, exactly. So this means that these companies are becoming enormous and, in fact, overly inflated. And they're also spending a lot of money on land. So they're all competing for this railroad land, and bids are going out, and everyone's investing in it. Everyone wants to make their name, their millions off of the railroads. And we know that a lot of people do, right? This is a time of sort of the robber barons, where we get these hyper wealthy Americans like John Rockefeller and figures like that who would never have made their fortunes if it wasn't for this enormous railroad building.
Yeah, but, it's because people recognize how revolutionary this is.
Yes.
It can turn a 6-week trip into a 6-day trip.
That's right. You know, I mean, it's changing the world. It's changing the American economy. It's bringing in the great Midwestern plains and all of the food that they can produce into our economic system. It is moving people out west in massive numbers. It's, like you said, making distances smaller, right? In a covered wagon, it took 6 months, like Carl said, to get across to the west. And now you can do that trip in 6 days. That is a huge change. I think of the railroad sort of on par with the creation of like the internet or something in the level of just change overnight that happens.
Right.
And it's not just transportation that changes. For example, because of the trains, we're going to get standardized time. If you look at timetables that exist from the pre-standardized era, every town had a different time. You'd have a town clock that would be adjusted occasionally when someone went to somewhere with a big city or up to a big city with a big clock, like New Orleans or New York, London. You'd change your pocket watch, right? You'd change your watch because you'd see, you know, this time in New York, and you'd be like, okay, I'm going to adjust it. And then you'd get home and you'd be like, okay, New York says it's this time, and you would fix your town clock, right?
Right.
Every town has a different time. And we see on timetables that are related to this that some of them are going to differ between towns as close as us in Jefferson by half an hour, an hour in what they think time is. Now, that's not as important when you're just working on the farm, right?
Right.
You're not worried about it. But when a train starts coming through, you got to catch a train. You got to be there at a certain time. And it starts driving people insane, the sort of level of imprecision that's going on with time. So we're actually going to get standardized time in the United States in 1883 as a result of the train system. It's going to mean that if you have a baby in Arkansas and your family is up in Massachusetts, it's not going to be weeks before they find out about it. You know, you can actually let them know in days.
Yeah.
Like, there's just amazing changes that come out of it.
We've got the telegraph this time.
Yes.
Around this time, too.
So we're going to begin experiencing what's called the Second Industrial Revolution in the United States. And this is when all those inventors just start making all of these things that make modern life so special and so easy, right? And the train is really the harbinger of a lot of this stuff. It's bringing it sort of to places that used to be the middle of nowhere, like Texarkana. I mean, it was nothing. It was just this, you know, place in the woods. It has this long history, as we've talked about in the past, but by this point, it's really completely undeveloped, right? So with the coming of the train to Texarkana, sort of the modern world begins to catch up. And at the same time, Texarkana is born. In 1873, we not only have the financial crisis, but we also have what we call radical Reconstruction beginning. So Reconstruction is the process after the Civil War by which the United States government enforces the new Reconstruction Amendments, the freedom of the slaves, the right to vote and citizenship for African Americans in the South. They're going to start freedom schools. The Freedmen's Bureau comes down, and it's a place that people of color who are victimized in their communities can go and ask for recourse and have a recourse. And of course, it's going to be something that's here. So radical Reconstruction is a period of Reconstruction where we have the highest sort of federal presence here. And so basically, we have the federal government sort of watching over us during this period, very involved in our everyday lives, which, of course, some people here did not like.
Some people here still don't like.
Right. Again, back to this sort of initial sort of question, right, of states and how does it work with a big system like this whenever your state's rights person. But Reconstruction is going on, too. So in a way, radical Reconstruction is the most sort of modern political ideology in America. And we also have this, it's trying to get a multicultural polity going, which isn't actually going to materialize for like 100 years after.
Right.
And we are going to have this train. So Texarkana is going to be founded at a crazy moment in time. However, we see that the beginning of the end is already in the cards in 1873, because with the panic of 1873, we're going to see the beginning of the government divesting from some of these things. We've had this massive downturn. We're going to have a huge recession. And so we're actually going to see that even as we're founded at this moment, it's going to be sort of the beginning of the decline for investment and things in railroads. So Texarkana is going to be founded really as this way station. We're going to have facilities for people who are coming through. At one point, there are going to be 9 different railroad lines that come through Texarkana and go off in all sorts of different directions. We are ultimately in 1881, when we link up with the Texas line, going to be a huge trunk railroad. You can actually travel all the way from the west, all the way back east or to the north, and you're going to come through here.
And that's when they started calling Texarkana the gateway city, right? The gateway to the west.
Yes.
Which now is what St. Louis is known as, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. As the frontier moves westward, every town gets its brief moment as the gateway to the west.
like the last stop before the desert or something.
But it still is this transitional place, right, between west and south, between sort of old and new. And it still has that flavor to it. We're always going to have this sort of crossroads feeling to us. You know, the way that we were founded really reflects that. I mean, the buildings that were built were, you know, shops for merchants who were trading using the trains, right? In fact, most of the early investors in the trains and Texarkana lots were people who were in trading business in some way, either shop owners or something like that. Gaio was a trader.
Ahern had a department store.
Right. So they're selling their goods, right? And the train is, of course, course, perfect for that. We're going to have, you know, hotels that spring up, and people, as they pass through, are going to stay, you know, overnight sometimes. Sometimes they're just here for a little while. They want to get dinner. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have restaurants and hotels. Now, I want to say that all of these facilities are segregated, right? Because mm-hmm. we are in the midst of, even though we have reconstruction going on, we're still in the Deep South. And so there are going to be two separate levels for all of these institutions. And that's just racially. We also have, you know, things for richer people, things for poorer people, et cetera, right? And so all of this is going to pop up around the train station. And then, of course, the people who work there are going to want to live by their work. And so we have all of these houses that begin popping up around there, too.
And the Texarkana Gazette gets founded in 1875.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. We'll talk about that a little bit more later.
And so the town of Texarkana, the city of Texarkana, is really born to serve the railroad itself. And, of course, now we still have a ton of railroad traffic coming through here, but we don't really think of ourselves as oriented around that. But at the time, it was the newest technology. They'd been working, as I mentioned, for 40 years to try and get it here. And when it finally does, it is a boom. We are a little boom town, and people's fortunes are made here. We grow very rapidly. At one point, we're going to have, in the 1880s, we built an opera house. We are have pretensions of becoming a very civilized place,
right,
indeed, very quickly.
The McCartney and the Graham hotels were considered extremely luxurious, right?
Absolutely. And even through the 1960s and 70s, they were still considered to be a really nice place to go for a honeymoon mm-hmm. or a vacation. I know people don't really think of these things when they think of Texarkana today.
Right.
But, you know, that's what it was. At the time, of course, living when the railroad's established, there aren't as many people in the rural areas around here. We are mostly logging, right, until we actually, there's going to be, in the early 20th century, there's going to be a big timber crash. That's probably not the right word to use when I'm talking about timber. The timber prices are going to fall enormously. And so that's going to, but up until then, that's what's really feeding. We have all of these virgin forests around here, and they're just chopping them, right, and sending them off. And so people who live around here are going to be a lot of rough people who are like working. That's not a judgment. That's just how we kind of talk about it historically.
Right.
Who are like working in these logging camps, doing timber. We have, and a lot of those are going to be single men, right? Mm-hmm. Thus the prevalence of brothels and saloons in early Texarkana. So it's not really what we think of as far as like the population. It's a very sort of rough and tumble, loose collection of people who are more or less transient workers, right? Who are moving around the state and the area doing these logging jobs. Over time, though, because the train brings with it these little towns that are going to pop up all along the train, we're going to see that those local areas are going to begin to look to Texarkana as sort of the place to go if you do want to go on your honeymoon
sort
or have a nice
sort
dinner.
Of a hub.
Yeah, exactly. We had a lot of people who came here to get married. It was, which is really funny if you think about it today.
We're recording this on Valentine's Day.
Oh, yeah, romantic.
A couple of years ago, I did a story. I wanted to know if someone wanted to spontaneously get married on Valentine's Day. Good day. And the answer is yes. In Arkansas, basically, you can get a license and get married the same day.
See, you don't even have to go to Las Vegas.
Right.
It would have been an exciting place to live during that time. There were a lot of fires all the time because everything's built of wood. We have the Paragon Saloon fire, which is very interesting at this time.
What year was that again?
I think
1880s
it was 1887. I can look real quick.
This was a fire in a saloon started by an electrical.
A tornado.
Oh, a tornado. Okay.
1882. So July 12th, 1882, the Paragon Saloon was on Broad Street in Texarkana, and right next to it was A.L. Gayo's brick building. It was the first brick building in Texarkana. But by 1882, he was already, it was like 9 years old, and he's already like, let's make another one. So he's tearing down his old building, and he is so that he can rebuild the new one. But they haven't finished tearing it down yet by this date, July 12th. And so one of the walls on the second floor, which is a brick wall, is sort of just standing there, like untethered. And what happens is they begin to notice that the skies are turning and, you know, it was a big storm coming in. And like I said, a lot of the people who worked here are timber workers. They're out in, outside all the time. A lot of them are living in these tent cities or, you know, makeshift shelters because they're sort of seasonal labor. Mm-hmm. And so as soon as those storms start to roll in, we see that they go to the many saloons here in town to try and stay away from the storm, which makes total sense, right? So there are over 100 people crowded into the Paragon mm-hmm. Saloon downtown. And what happens is a tornado comes through along with this terrible storm that's coming in. And the tornado knocks the freestanding wall, the brick wall, down onto the Paragon Saloon, which is next door. Mm-hmm. And so it collapses part of the Paragon Saloon. And the Paragon is lit, of course, entirely by candlelight and
gas.
And gas. And so as soon as that happens, there's going to be a conflagration that begins, and a lot of people are going to be caught in the middle of the fire.
Yeah.
We even have an account of a guy whose friend tries to come back in to save him because he's like pinned under a table and there's like a beam that's burning beside him, and he comes to try and get him out. And his friend says, "Don't bother with me, save yourself." And he shoots himself in the head.
Dang.
I know. And this is all in the national newspapers right? Like, this is one of the early famous things that happen in Texarkana.
A couple of years ago, someone named a new bar downtown the Paragon. It didn't succeed. I thought, that's tempting fate. That's, I don't know about that.
Right? And in the end, we know at least 29 people died in that disaster, but it could have been as high as 52. We're not sure because a lot of the people were, like I said, these migratory workers who are working at these jobs. So really early on, sort of one of these disasters that literally puts our name on the map, though. I mean, if you search the New York Times for Texarkana, generally you have the railroad being started and then you have the Paragon. Those are the two big events.
So the picture we've got at this point, as the railroads are completed, is a place where lots of people are coming and going. There's commerce. There are new ideas flowing. There are rich people and workers. It's this sounds to me like a really dynamic, sort of diverse, energetic place.
Right, which is, there were over 70 trains that were stopping here daily during that time, 70. Yeah. And each one of those would have had people from all sorts of places who were loading on and loading off, all sorts of goods from all over the country and the world. Everything's getting smaller, so we can access anything, you know, and we are now connected up with the rest of the country. This is also a time when we start thinking of ourselves in more national terms as Americans in general, because we're so connected to each other. So it's a dynamic place. It is exciting. And it would have seemed like a future, like the future is here, living here in Texarkana, which I think is interesting if we think about the feeling that the place might have for people now, which is sort of something that is past, right?
Right, that we're trying to revive in a way or redo.
Right, and we'll never have the energy of the railroad again, not only here in Texarkana, but at all, right? This is a phenomenal once in a, you know, humanity moment, right? And who knows what may revitalize things, but certainly it contained our sort of heyday within this context of a railroad and being a railroad town. We are a railroad town, and we fall and rise with the fortunes of the railroad,
right.
You know, maybe we're going to have more railroads in the future. I know that there's a lot of interest in high-speed rail, more passenger trains, things like that. Mm-hmm. So maybe in the future, Texarkana will reemerge as a wonderful hub on the railroad system.
There you go.
But for now, we still have the railroads. They still come through here. They're still very important to our economy. Mm-hmm. But I think as far as our culture goes, we've really sort of forgotten how central they are to not only creating Texarkana, but also creating this dynamic culture that we had in Texarkana for a long time.
Yeah. Sounds like a good place to end it. Thanks so much for taking some more time.
You're so welcome. And we want to hear what you guys want us to talk about. Please send in any suggestions.
Yeah, I'll put our email addresses in the show notes, mm-hmm. and you can just get in touch with us.
Yeah, we'll research and chat about whatever you guys want us to. Let us know. And, of course, if you guys have any questions or comments, please send them on over so we can know what you're thinking.
All right. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Carl.
On the Line is a Texarkana Gazette podcast recorded in Star Bear Studio, right here in downtown Texarkana, USA. Follow On the Line on our website, texarkanagazette.com/podcast. To support the show, post a positive review wherever you get your podcasts. And please, spread the word by sharing a link or telling a friend. I write, produce, and edit the show, and I'd love to hear from you. Email me at krichter@texarkanagazette.com and let me know what you think. I'll see you next time on The Line.